Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. The show is for the week of February 6th, 2022. The global carbon dioxide level is 418.78 parts per million, and there are 2,886 days left until the year 2030. So today, we're going to talk about two scary stories. One pretends to be scary, but in fact isn't. But the other is factual and turns out to be kind of scary when you think about it. So in order to understand the two stories we'll talk about, you need a little context and background. And of course, that context always comes back to something called methane gas, a.k.a. better known as natural gas. That is to say, the stuff that comes into your house to heat your home and to cook your meals, right? Natural gas is, in fact, chemically called methane. It's composed of one carbon atom and four hydrogen atoms, CH4. That's the chemical formula. And, of course, that molecule of methane only has one carbon atom in it. And so the idea is that burning methane is cleaner, in quotation marks, than burning coal, where there's a lot more carbon per hydrogen atom, so to speak. Methane, in that respect, is pretty good, and it's been touted as the bridge fuel, cleaner burning. We've seen that for decades, right? Clean burning natural gas. The fly in the ointment is that the unburned methane, that is to say, the methane, natural methane, if it gets into the air, is 86 times more potent, more of a greenhouse gas, more capable of capturing heat than is CO2, carbon dioxide. Right? So it's 86 times more of a greenhouse gas over the course of a 20-year lifetime that it stays in the atmosphere. So, there you go. If you had a way that... So the natural gas is thought to be cleaner to burn. But if you leak any of that natural gas, what are called fugitive emissions, if any of that gas escapes anywhere between the wellhead in where it's getting fracked out in the countryside and along all the pipes and everything that's going to go through to get to your home, if any of that methane leaks, it's pretty bad. And when you think that, you know, methane is 86 times worse than carbon dioxide, right? So let's just do a little thought experiment. 86 times greater is, for the purposes here, pretty close to 100 times more of a greenhouse gas, right? So you say, well, if it's 100 times more potent, then if I leak, if 1% of that gas escapes, then that gas is just as bad as if I let out a whole lot of CO2, carbon dioxide, right? And it turns out that the whole process of bringing methane gas from Pennsylvania to Massachusetts leaks something like 3% of the gas. And that's, again, at the wellhead. It's in all those crazy pipes under your street. It's that funny smell you get walking around a city sometime of a little leaking methane gas. It's always there. And that's why methane is a bad greenhouse gas. It's also true that when you burn methane, you make stuff called nitrogen oxide. And recently there's been a lot of discussion about how if you use natural gas to cook your food in your kitchen, you are generating nitrous oxide gases, which are bad for you. They're pollutants. You're making these 2.5 micron particles from stuff that gets, you know, assembled in the flame. And you're catching all that in your kitchen, and it can be, depending on the circumstances, considerably worse than would be allowed outside. So there in your safe little kitchen, the gas can be, the air can be worse, polluted, more polluted than if you're outside, according to EPA limits. That's because you're burning stuff on the stove. Okay. Third interesting fact about methane gas is that the utility, that is to say, whoever pumps the gas into your house, whoever you pay that bill to, they are fully aware of this information, but they make their money by piping gas to you, right? By building those pipelines, bringing the gas here. And in fact, a lot of that gas in recent years, natural gas, has gone to electrical power plants. So they take some of it. So there's sort of a competition between your stovetop, what you cook, and getting the electricity, getting electricity to run your house, because then that methane, natural methane gas, also goes to power electrical plants. Okay, so there's some background. There's two scary stories we wanted to talk about. First scary story is kind of this annual ritual that the fossil fuel industry here in Massachusetts, which is primarily, you know, Eversource, the American Gas Association, Enbridge, I mean, all those guys put together running the electrical power plants. Typically, every winter, they get together and fret and say, oh my goodness, we don't have enough gasoline coming in. We must build a new pipeline, right? And a lot of this year, a lot of that discussion is couched in terms of the horrible stuff that happened in Texas last year. If you remember, Texas had this terrible ice storm. And through poor planning, one thing and another, a lot of the natural gas plants froze up. Some of the wind turbines froze up because they weren't winterized. A general terrible circumstance happened in Texas. Well, the utilities here in Massachusetts keep dragging out the Texas example and saying, oh, we could have something like that here in Massachusetts. Oh, my God, we would all freeze in the dark, right? We just don't have enough natural gas. And behind that, standing behind that fear that we're all going to be browned out during a blizzard, right, is the idea that, oh, yeah, we should build more pipelines so that we have plentiful gas on the one or two days where it's really, really high demand for the natural gas because it's snowing and people want to get warm and they want to cook their food all at the same time. Right? So there was an article in the Globe recently basically parroting this line. It was in the business section of the Globe. There was pushback to that. There was an article, I would say an unfortunate article, in Commonwealth Magazine, again, that just seemed to repeat the industry talking points that we need more gas. We need, or not that we need more gas, but that, oh my goodness, New England could have a Texas-style brownout, and wouldn't that be terrible? And then everyone looks around and says, oh, what could we do about it? Well, we could build more gas pipelines. So that's a scare story that's not really true, because if there are certainly ways to resolve the issue. I mean, we're faced with a circumstance where we must decarbonize, that is to say, use less natural gas. That is an existential threat to the gas industry, right? They have a huge investment in infrastructure of pipelines and compressors and yada, yada, all this stuff. They want to use that and make money at it. And so they're going to find any excuse that they can to keep that hardware, the pipes and the people and the compressors all in the power plants all functioning as long as they possibly can. And so they are essentially throwing up a smokescreen saying that we have to be scared. They are not making what I would call a good faith effort to address the question of how we're going to reduce our carbon dioxide emissions from burning anything and get to the goals that we know as a society that we have to get rid of the natural gas. These guys are fighting a rear guard action by trying to scare us and telling us we're all going to freeze in the dark. There's ways around that. I mean, if we were building more renewable power now, if we were enthusiastically doing that, we could have plans to make sure that there was enough gas you know, there would be ways to manage those few days of the year when it's extremely cold, right, and the demand for the gas is highest. There's a way to manage that. In fact, some of the recent January cold days, they talked about lack of gas. But in fact, my understanding is that it's not so much that there wasn't enough gas, but the price for the gasoline, for the gas, natural gas, was high. And so all of these power plants switched over to run on essentially bunker fuel, right? Not natural gas. They were running on oil and complaining because they didn't have enough gas. But the question is not really enough gas. It was enough gas at a price that made them happy. So anyway, this pushback across the spectrum, places like the Globe should stop publishing unreviewed, uncritical articles of whatever the head of the power plant says this week, because typically it's all scare stories. So be not afraid, right? You'll see these things in the paper, how we're all need more gas so we don't have a Texas-style brownout. That's a scam. Don't fall for it. So that's the first false, scary story. Let's talk about the true scary story. The truest scary story is that in addition to all of the bad things that I said about methane before, that is to say, cooking with methane, natural gas in your home generates nitrous oxides and particulate levels that are high, even compared to what the EPA considers safe, right? So just cooking with methane gas is bad for you, right? Bad for your kids, there's all kinds of statistics. This is not a good deal. What's interesting is that this has been extended a little bit further recently by a study done out in California, where the researchers studied 53 different homes in 7 different California counties. Okay? So 53 stoves is a fairly small number. Again, compared to, I think there's like 40 million gas stoves in the United States. 53 is a pretty small number, right? But on the assumption that they've got some reasonable statistics and they're not biased, what these folks came up with is that there's methane, natural gas methane leaking into your home just by virtue of having a gas stove in your house, right? So this is in addition to the pollution that's created when you cook. And so what these guys did was to look and say, you know, between the time that you turn the knob on the gas stove and the time when the lighter catches and you get a flame, right, there's a half a second, there's a lot of natural gas coming out then, okay? If you have a pilot light, old-fashioned pilot light, you're leaking gas almost continuously, right? And they said that there's an interesting question of how much of the gas that is put into the burner, even when it's burning, how much of that gas actually gets burned? So there's some unburned component of natural gas that escapes out of your cook stove as you're cooking. And then the killer is, killer is a bad word. I mean, the final thing is that many gas stoves over the course of time, the connections behind the stove into the wall, right, often on one of these flexible hoses you see, that gets to loosen up and starts to leak a little bit of gas, right? So that's kind of a horrifying thought, that the gas stove in your kitchen is sitting there silently leaking. And what these researchers claim is that it's leaking whether you're have a new stove or an old stove, right? It's not so much the age of the gas stove that causes the leak. I mean, I guess I'm thinking about saying they put what's called an odorant into the natural gas. That's the natural gas, terrible smell you get, right? So if I have a gas stove, if my stove was leaking, you'd expect to smell some of that. But I guess what they're saying is that it's at a low enough rate that you don't pick that up, you don't notice it. And or, I mean, there's a variation in how much different gas stoves are leaking. Imagine all the old 20-year-old gas stoves that are out there today, right? They're probably leaking a lot. Anyway, the argument is that the leaks from the gas stove of methane gas into your home is roughly the equivalent of the pollution from 500,000 automobiles for a year, right? When you aggregate, when you go from the 53 stove tops they studied to the 40 million that are out there, when you scale all that up, there's a lot of carbon pollution. From my mind, it's not at all surprising when you think of it. I mean, all of the stoves of different ages and different quality of installation, and you know, some with pilot, some with that. It makes sense that there's a significant amount of methane leaking into your kitchen. Presumably, it's a safe amount, right? Because you know, most of the time you don't get the methane smell. But anyway, the case is that there is leaking in your kitchen. That's kind of a more of a realistic, scary story to contemplate. And of course, what it does is it raises the idea that induction cooking is better, right? Induction stovetop, which is all electric. And of course, that is the existential threat to the gas utilities. And if everybody goes away from gas, the gas utilities out of business. Anyway, some of that conversation led to further opinion editorial pieces in the Boston Globe. Yvonne Abrams put up an article saying that we need to make natural gas unnatural, right? Kind of a catchy thing. She makes the point, and we have talked about this in the shows recently about the Gas System Enhancement Program, the GSEP, is that we ratepayers are paying a lot of money to rebuild the gas infrastructure, even though we need to get off it. And that's, you know, we're barely keeping up with the methane leaks under the street, much less in our kitchens. And so that's an interesting read. And then Mindy Luber, who is the CEO and president of Ceres, a important nonprofit here in the Boston area, points out, you know, in a similar vein, that Massachusetts has lost both the hydropower transmission line that was going to come down from Maine. I think we talked about that a few weeks ago. The Transportation Climate Initiative, which was supposed to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from all the transportation, from cars and trains and buses and everything, that seems to be now defunct. But the state still needs to move ahead, right? And so she makes the case that the state needs to aggressively deal with putting up more charges for electrical vehicles. She points out quite rightly that there's something like $9 billion coming from the federal government, courtesy of our current president, right, with the Infrastructure Act. $9 billion is a lot of money, and that should be put into transportation. I would say, for my part, I think electric buses all through Boston, right? How do we improve the transportation into and out of Boston without increasing carbon dioxide pollution? Here's $9 billion. Go do something, right? Seems like an interesting question. Luber also talks about how Massachusetts is poised to get a whole lot of wind power, right? We need to make up for the potential loss of the electrical transmission line that would bring us the power from Hydro-Quebec that goes through Maine, right? That got rejected by the Mainers in last fall's election. So now we got to scramble. The way we got to scramble is to build a lot of wind turbines. So there you go. I'll put a link to that article as well. So what we've seen is two stories, one story that's intended to scare you, but isn't really that scary when you look behind it, right? This is the idea that we need to build more pipelines because we don't want to be like Texas, right? That's just a scam. The flip side, the other story is a more realistic one, that gas stove in your kitchen, what you think is benign, could easily be leaking and is leaking when you turn it on, right? Between the time you turn it on and the time the flame catches, there's some gas leaking out. That's not a good thing. It's a reason to think more clearly about electrifying your home. All right. So what is it? I'll put up links to those things on the blog. That blog is at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have a question about this show or any ideas of what we ought to talk about, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what you think. You're probably listening to the show directly on your smartphone using one of the modern podcast distribution apps. Turns out that between Apple, Google, Stitcher, and Podbean, many of you are listening. If you are listening to us on Spotify, don't be surprised if we disappear. I'm sure you followed some of the controversy with our Joe Rogan and whatnot. We're trying to figure out how to manage that here at the Climate Minute. We want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close the way we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that respects environmental justice communities. So thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.